This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, I'm Umar Paganavagevagan.
And I'm Richard Bradbury. That was a bit energetic there.
I know, I'm full of energy today. So today we're going to be talking about kidnapping in Malaysia and just how dangerous it is or can be. We've heard the stories before. You know, 2 years ago, there was a student who attended Montclair International School, was kidnapped. A young kid was kidnapped on his way to school by two men in a black vehicle. Last month, we heard about the gruesome abduction, murder of a two-year-old Siti Sofia Imelda. A toddler was seen on camera being led by an unknown man into a lift at the Kota Raya Mall. And the short video clip is the last time she was seen alive.
Yep. Now, and also earlier this month, gunmen seized two workers from a fish farm in Sabah, despite increased security, making it the third kidnapping in Sabah state since April. I mean, and we could go on, you know, listing this litany of abductions within Malaysia, whether it's here in the capital or over in Sabah. It seems that we're reading about this kind of report with increasing regularity.
That's right. But are kidnappings becoming more common? Has Malaysia always had an abundance of abductions, or are we just hearing about them more often these days? On today's show, we're going to be speaking to two people who have detailed, intimate knowledge on the topic of kidnapping. In May 2012, Chin Sin Chi grabbed headlines when she escaped a kidnapping at the Curve in Mutiara Damansara. She bounced back with an app that can help rescue girls who get into similar kinds of danger.
And speaking of headlines, we have Andrew Sagayam, is that right? Former crime reporter, is going to be here to help us understand how these things are reported, what can we do, what we can't reveal. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey.
So, Andy, let's start with you. I suppose the question that a lot of people will want to know the answer to is why this is being reported more and more, why we're reading more about it. Is kidnapping booming, or are we just hearing more about it now? So you've been doing the crime beat for, you told me, 16 years?
Yeah.
So you've been doing this for a while.
Well, I think the media coverage now is much better. It's more extensive, and news travel faster nowadays, right? But I think kidnapping cases in here in this country is not as much as vehicle or property theft. I think those cases are much higher. Kidnapping, I think it's kind of random. It happens random. Yeah.
So I'm assuming property theft and vehicle theft.
Yeah, it's much more on the crime index.
Meaning they're easier to shift and easier to get money for the criminals, right?
Yeah, it's easier. Crime to commit, so to speak.
Now, that brings me on to an interesting question, though, because when we're trying to research for this topic, I noticed it's very difficult to kind of obtain official statistics, that paint this full picture of what's happening here in Malaysia. I mean, why is that? Does the government and indeed the kidnapping victims, you know, choose to underreport these crimes? I mean, what's happening?
Okay. When the media is, when we come up with kidnapping cases, there's always an embargo issued. Right. By the police, because they want to make sure that the victim's life is not at stake. So they want to get more details on what happened. Basically, you know, where the victim is at that moment, who are these people who kidnapped this person,
right.
Stuff like that. So, the information is not given until the police have enough. So, and also to protect, most of it is to protect the victim's life. They don't want anything to happen to them.
Okay.
So they will wait. And most of the time, these kidnappers would demand ransom. So that is where they try to get the suspects, when the ransom is being
exchanged.
Yeah, that's when.
Right. And of course, there are different kinds, because, you know, the kidnappings that we hear about happening off the coast of Sabah seem to be tied into southern Philippines. There seems to be a greater ransom play, right? Because they only seem to be kidnapping Chinese nationals
right.
at the moment.
Right.
Meanwhile, the kidnappings that happen at the Curve and happen at, you know,
local,
you know, we heard about a couple of cases in Publica as well. Mm. They seem to be more local, which brings us, Sinchi, to your case, which is incredibly fascinating, because you seem to be in the minority. You were almost abducted, but you managed to escape. Well
so
done
close.
You. Well done you, but you need to tell us, walk us through what actually happened. Because I think a lot of us heard about your case on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Like, that kind of had a life of its own. But no, I was actually it was a normal Sunday afternoon. I went to do boring stuff, buy printer, paper, and ink. And
what time was this?
About 5 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was broad daylight still. And I was walking back to my car, and I opened the car door to shove my stuff in it when someone slammed the car door into my back and held a knife to my neck. I originally thought that it was a really bad prank. And like 3 seconds later, I realized that this is not a prank. So
I love how your mind went there first. You're like, all right, guys, cut it out.
No, I'm serious. Like, you, when stuff like that happens to you, you don't think that it's actually happening to you, right? Like, I just thought it was a really stupid friend. So it was really unexpected when it wasn't a stupid friend. So and the second guy comes out and they shove me into the back of my own car. And after a while, they drive off with me in it. And I'm incredibly grateful. I remember thinking, like, it's a Sunday afternoon. Someone's bound to try and take my parking spot and therefore see my face, like, in the car window looking, like, super terrified. Unfortunately for me, that day, no one was there. So as we were driving out the parking lot, I decided to risk it and jump out of the car. So I unlocked the car door without them knowing. And when the car eventually slowed down to merge with traffic, I opened the car door and after like a brief fight for about 400 or 500 meters, managed to roll out of the car.
So how much time passed from you know, you being shoved into the back of the car to you bailing out of it?
Well, from CCTV, from the moment I exited the parking lobby and the moment like the cameras caught me running back into the mall, it was about 7 minutes.
That's a long 7 minutes, right?
I know. It was a really long 7 minutes.
Wow. So wait, tell me, Sinji, you decided to come forward. I mean, by that, you know, you posted your story on Facebook.
Well, I think that part was less deliberate of a coming forward than anything else. I didn't really want to recount the story to every single person I meet. Well, it didn't matter anyway, but... and then what happened was I was like, you know what, I'm going to put a Facebook note and so that people will stop asking me and I will just go to bed. It was at 1 a.m. I posted at 1 a.m. and I went to sleep. And the next morning, my brother calls me from Australia saying that, hey, dude, you got 10,000 share away.
Just like that.
Just like that.
And you know, how did that, I guess, but that helps, doesn't it? I mean, because the word got out and it just meant that many more people would be vigilant and cautious.
Yeah, and I think it kind of highlighted these weird kidnappings. What happened to me was the first in what I felt was a spree after that.
Yeah.
I remember there was an older woman in PJ who was beaten up really badly.
That's right.
One in 1U, two in Publica.
There was something in Mid Valley as well.
Exactly, Mid Valley. All that happened in a span of 2 months. And I don't know if it would have gotten so much attention if not for the fact that I had posted that note.
Right. We'll get more about the story and also what you're doing with this app of yours. But first, every teardrop is a waterfall. Coldplay on BFM 89.9. This is the evening edition with Richard and Uma. We're talking kidnapping in Malaysia. We have Andrew Sagayam. He's a former crime reporter. He's worked the crime beat for about 16 years. We've also got Chin Sin Chi. You know her story. You've read it on Facebook. She was almost kidnapped and managed to escape. One of the few people who's actually managed to do that. Mm. Sinji, up until this happened,
yeah.
I guess, were you ever concerned about your security in places like shopping malls and parking lots?
I think I was more concerned about my bag being snatched. I mean, at that point, like, every other person I know has been a victim of snatch theft, like my boyfriend's mom, every colleague I know. So that was a bigger concern. It's certainly not being shoved into my own car.
Mm.
Right. And how has that changed the way you manage yourself a day-to-day in places like shopping malls and car parks?
Well, I'm incredibly paranoid. Like, if I look around, look over my shoulder when I walk to the car, I got my key out all the time. I lock the door immediately the moment I step in. And no matter how many bags I'm carrying, I carry all of that into my driver's seat with me. Mm. So I don't care. It's on my lap and I lock the door. Then I sort it out.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. So it's taught me to be incredibly vigilant.
We really shouldn't have to be.
No.
You know, I think that's what annoys me about the discourse that happens around these things. Whenever something happens, the first question people ask, or even the police ask, is, oh, where was your bag on the front seat?
Right.
And my first question to them is, if you're doing your job, my bag could be on the front seat and nothing would happen.
Do you know what the police asked me when I made my report? They said, hey, Cik, you pakai rantai ke? It's like, he asked me if I was wearing a necklace.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to kidnap you for a necklace. It's ridiculous.
Chinchi, how else has it affected you, though? I mean, you say you're paranoid. You say you're putting all your stuff. I mean, in your day-to-day life, I mean, has it altered you drastically, do you think?
Well, I wouldn't know about drastically, but career-wise, it certainly has. I mean, prior to this, I was a consultant for social media and internet marketing. And after that, I realized that safety is a big part of my life, and not just a big part of my life, it's a big part of every woman's life. Recently, there was a huge campaign going out on Facebook called Yes, All Women. And every woman. The whole point was that every woman at any point in their life has been sexually harassed or will be sexually harassed. And all that kind of contributes to this feeling of lack of safety. And I realized it's really not just my problem. So on a career level, like, it's made me wonder, okay, technology has come so far. What can we do to actually help out?
Right. Speaking about technology, Andy, how has technology changed the way in which we look at crime, how we hear about crime, how it's reported? How has it changed things, do you think?
In what sense, Richard?
Do you have access to people easier? Do you have access to sources easier? Is it easier for you to publish these stories? That kind of thing.
It depends on the cases itself. It's much easier to publish stories now. But the information, I'm talking about information, details that we can get to make the story complete or full.
Right.
Then we need that from the cops. We need that. And most of the time, they always issue embargo, like I mentioned earlier, on these kidnapping cases because they fear for the victim's safety and their life.
Which is why a lot of the time when we hear about the kidnapping case, it's usually been solved.
Yeah. The police will work fast on it.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah,
right?
Which is a good thing.
So with that in mind, though, how do you think it's almost detrimental that we have the social media, the kind of Facebooking culture when it comes to these situations? Has that hindered your job as a reporter, and do you think it's hindering the job of the policeman?
It does not help the police if it's like spread out all over the web, because you got to realize that these criminals also keep track of the news. So if they fear that the police are onto them, it's dangerous.
Right, and is there a close working relationship between people on the crime beat and the police, or is it just a kind of a gentleman's agreement to stay out of each other's way?
It depends on cases. We have good days, we have bad days. On Sundays they are fine, they're friendly. Some days they're not.
Right.
So it depends on the cases.
Right.
Chinchi, after you kind of shared your story on Facebook, you had a big response, right? 60,000, was it?
No, about 50,000.
50,000, okay. So after you'd done that, what kind of response did you have from people outside? Did you have other victims getting in touch?
You'd be surprised how many from all over the world. My Facebook inbox suddenly became super full of women all over the world who've gone through some similar stuff.
Right.
As myself. And I realized how lucky I was, because many times, like, by the time they get out, they'd already been sexually assaulted, or they were really, really hurt. So, I also had like a bunch of trolls, inevitably, who said, like,
welcome to the internet.
Welcome to the internet, right? It's like, I bet you she was wearing something sexy. Some crap like that.
Yeah, but that goes. But we don't pay attention to those idiots, right? No. But when it comes to your case in particular, do you know if there's any? Have these guys been caught? Do you know if there's been any updates on the people?
One of the guys was caught 8 months later.
Oh wow! Yeah. Cool.
So it was last year, and according to the prosecutor, he's been sentenced to about 10 years.
Well, hey.
Yeah, 10 years. I consider myself incredibly lucky because turns out he was HIV positive. So if I didn't get away, it would have been really bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Wait, so they've caught one of the guys.
How
come they haven't managed to catch the other guys if these guys were in cahoots?
Well, firstly, apparently, I don't know all this for sure, but what they told me was that this guy they caught said that he doesn't really know the other guy. They just decided to go grab somebody because they're drug addicts. I mean, to me, it's like a load of,
you know.
So, but whatever, right? Either way, if they caught the second guy, I would not have been able to ID him. He was sitting in the front seat, so I never really caught a good look on his face. So for the police, I guess, catching one person to them was case closed.
Wow. All right. Very quickly, before we go to Elvis Costello, these emergency buttons that we see in all malls now, almost everyone has it. I was going to ask your opinion on two things: emergency buttons and women's only car park spaces. Do you think they help at all in any way?
Oh, hi. Okay. Honestly, I've tried to run away from people before. I'm not going to run to a button. I'm going to run to the next, like, entrance I see where there are a lot of people. So I'm not going to waste two precious seconds hitting a button. I don't think that works. And women's only parking lots will probably only work if there are guards surrounding the place.
Well, that, and it's like...
Well, if not, the criminals just know where to hang out.
Exactly.
It's a honeypot, you know?
Like, they don't even need to, like, choose.
Honeypot, Richard, really?
It's been a long day. I could have used a better phrase.
All right. We're talking about kidnapping in Malaysia. We've got Chin Sin Chi. She's a kidnapping survivor. We've got Andrew Sagayam. He's a former crime reporter with 16 years experience on the beat. After this, we're going to be talking about how Sin Chi's changed her career and what she's done about, helping other women who may be in that situation. But first, a very, very cool song by Elvis Costello, Veronica, on BFM 89.9. Today, about kidnappings in Malaysia, we have Chin Sin Chi. She's a kidnapping survivor. You know her story. You've read it on Facebook. You've shared it 20,000 times. 50,000 times, sorry. We've also got Andrew Sagayam. He's a former crime reporter with about 16 years on the beat. We've got a whole wide range of things about personal safety and, you know, what the current situation is in Malaysia. Sin Chi, of course, you've kind of changed your career based on this. You've started coming up with ways to help other women who might be in similar situations. Tell us about that.
I thought to myself that safety, like I said earlier, affects women all over the world, and technology, I felt at that point, hadn't been doing enough. Most of the apps on the market were panic button apps. And actually the police had one.
It's called
My Distress. I remember.
They discontinued it, right?
They did. A funny thing is, my mom nagged me until I actually got My Distress on my phone, so I actually had it on my phone when I was abducted. But it was of no help.
But of course, when someone's shoving you into a car,
I'm not
the
gonna
last
go.
Thing you do is like, where's my phone?
And then unlock that screen and type in my passcode. Like, you know the drill, right? So, and I asked myself if there would be any simpler way to activate an emergency. So my co-founder and I developed Watch Over Me together. And in the past year, we've got about 150,000 users worldwide.
Right.
And we're now expanding Watch Over Me to include some measure of crime prevention. I personally believe that when you've got data available to you, you can make decisions. For example, if there were three people mugged on this street right out here in Bandar Utama in the past week, would you be more careful?
Mm. Yeah,
I mean, logically, you would, right? So, but here's the funny thing. Many people I know who've had their bags snatched don't report it to the police.
Right.
So you usually don't know unless it's in your immediate circle of friends. Mm. So we're kind of building in the functionality that would allow users to report it or pull this information from Facebook and Twitter to be able to alert other people who use our app and say, like, hey, you know, this street is actually high crime, so you might want to be careful.
And of course, that data comes in handy for the police as well, so they can log on to Watch Over Me. And
if they use it.
So tell us how it works. Tell us how the app works and what sets it apart.
Watch Over Me is super simple. You let the app know how long to watch over you for, literally. Let's say 20 minutes if you're going on a hike on Bukit Gasing. 20 minutes. And then for the next 20 minutes...
I love how everyone uses Bukit Gasing as
I know,
example.
Right?
It is a cesspool. Anyway, yeah,
it's disgusting. Anywhere else you're gonna hike in PJ, not Bukit Gasing. So 20 minutes, and then for the next 20 minutes, it tracks your location every minute. And at about the 19th or 18th minute, it'll say, hey, is everything okay? And if after multiple pings to your phone and you don't respond, the app assumes that something is happened to you, therefore you can't respond, and sends out an emergency alert to your emergency contacts. It could be like your mom, your dad, your best friend, your dog, whatever. And they will have like information such as your location. And for Android phones, it would also turn on your phone's camera,
right,
and be able to record what's going on, like short snippets of that.
Very cool. I like that a lot. Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's good. But you said you've got subscribers worldwide as well.
Yes.
So what has the response been from people using the apps in other countries?
Well, a review came in about a couple months ago from a woman in the States. She said that she was walking home and some guy came up to her and said, give me all your stuff. And we have this other feature called Shake to Trigger. So it basically allows you to trigger an emergency alert immediately by shaking your phone.
Vigorously shaking your phone.
Exactly. For Android, you can do it even if your phone's on a lock screen. Mm. no issue there. Mm. So she did that, and she kind of screamed and said, like, the alarm came on. She's like, the police not have your face, my mom has your face, and he ran away. So she typed that out in the App Store. She left a good review for us, and that's apparently that worked, I guess.
Where do you seem to be seeing the most downloads come from?
Surprisingly, Australia and the US.
Really?
Yes.
Why do you think that is?
In 2012, there was this huge case in Melbourne. This woman named Jill Meager was walking home from, like, drinks with her friends. It wasn't even that late. And she never made it home. 6 days later, they found her body. She'd been raped and murdered in Melbourne. And a week later, when they finally caught the guy, 30,000 Melbourne citizens of Melbourne, whatever you call them, they walked the streets. Basically, they were protesting the fact that this was a very preventable crime. Mm-hmm. If I can't remember the details, but if I recall, the guy who attacked her had previously attacked, like, a prostitute or something before, but it wasn't taken seriously. Mm-hmm. So, which is why, like, there was a huge uproar, and that was a really big deal in Melbourne last year, actually. So wow. I guess that's why.
That might have been, yeah, I guess so. I completely missed that story. I don't know how that happened. Andy, tell me, in your opinion, when it comes to, I guess, kidnapping and cases and similar cases, what role do you think the media should play? Is it to investigate? Is it to sit back and assist the police? Where do you think the media comes in?
I think a bit of both. We've got to assist the police if we have any details on our own. Because thing is, in certain cases like hers, there'll be someone who have witnessed the whole thing, but they will not come front. They will not come forward to give details. So I think that's where the role of the media is, to get information from the public and relate it to the police and also work with them at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
And Cynthia, do you think things are getting better or is it just status quo?
I don't think things have changed very much. I think...
I agree with you.
Yeah, yeah. I think people are still distrustful of the police. Mm. The general morale is low. Everyone, at least in KL, I don't know about other cities in Malaysia, but people don't feel very safe. None of my friends do.
I think the presence of police and being able to see police around is something that makes you feel safe.
Exactly.
And to be honest, I don't see them very often.
You know? Oh, no, only at 3 a.m. when you're driving back from clubbing.
Right.
They're everywhere then. Sorry. That's
but it's a fair point, though, you know.
For an entirely different purpose. But, yes, thank
you
very
much. Them a lot more now, apparently.
Yes, yes.
You might. Yeah. It's football season, you know. But thank you so much, guys, for coming. And since you for sharing your story,
thank
the app,
you.
I believe, is Watch Over Me. Very, very cool idea. Well done on that.
Thanks.
So, yeah, we've been talking about kidnapping in Malaysia. You can download this podcast on bfm.my after these messages. Waterfall by the Stone Roses on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.